This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Yeah, buddy, welcome into the Monday edition of Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Appreciate you making us part of your night, however you may be tuning in. And as we hit the air, a developing situation. In fact, it's just done developing. It is over. The NCAA FCS championship is over in college football. Montana State wins 35-34, just as we got on the air. In case you missed it, this game went to overtime. Illinois State, on a PAT after scoring first in overtime, was blocked. That made it 34 to, let's see, I gotta do math, 28. And then Montana State, as we got on the air, kicked the PAT following their touchdown in overtime. They pick up the win. They are your national championships, champions at that level. We saw this number go from 8.5 to 10.5. If you laid it, you did not win tonight. If you took it with Illinois State, despite them losing the game, you did win on your bet. The game goes over the total of 57.5 very easily with that overtime frame especially. And that's how it ends. Montana State 35, Illinois State 34. Your final score in the FCS title game. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. I really appreciate you being here tonight. And what's going to be a really fun show? We have a lot to dive into because the playoff field is finally set. No more debating about, is this team good? Is this team going to get in? Is this team going to turn it on when it matters? I.e. Baltimore Ravens. It was never going to happen. So I'm happy I was put out of my misery with my Super Bowl ticket there. But we're going to break down the playoff field. I added a few bets up at VSiN.com/picks. Plus, we've got to also analyze what's going on with these coaching hires. I'm going to rank the openings in the NFL as of right now. My number one, it is not the Giants. It is not the Raiders. Tune in later to find out who my number one opening is in the National Football League. And then we're going to hear from a numbers game a little bit later on in the show. Gil and Kelly debating coach of the year, questioning Mike Vrabel as the favorite. We'll see what they have to say about that market. As it's all been closed, taken off the board, the voting has started. We will find out in a couple, in about a month, month and a half, who wins all the awards we've all lobbied for. And one that I promise. This will be my last day discussing it on the air. The Most Valuable Player Award. One last thought on that as part of Like, Love, and Loathe from the weekend coming up later this hour. But in the meantime, I got to get you updated where we stand with all of the action currently going on. NBA first. We've got the Nuggets and the Sixers going to overtime. Overtime frame just got underway through regulation, 120 to 120. Nuggets just jumped out to a 123-120 lead. Current in-game total is 163.5. Philly is laying 1.5 in this one, where Denver rested everyone, which was a bit of a conundrum to deal with from a player prop perspective. You guys know my process by now. If someone's out, who benefits? Well, when everyone's out, I got paralysis by analysis looking at this game. I didn't know if it'd be Julian Strother. I didn't know if it'd be Bruce Brown or Peyton Watson. How about this? If you would have bet any of them, you would have went over pretty much, at least when it comes to like points, rebounds, assists, points, the combo, one or the other, points or combo. But right now, Jalen Pickett is your leading scorer. 29 points, 5 rebounds, 7 assists. Peyton Watson, 24, 6, and 4. Bruce Brown, 17, 3, and 2. So right now, that's where we stand in that game. Denver now up 123-122, Philly with a bucket to make it a one-point game there. Golden State and the Clip. Ooh, Golden State coming back. They were down a little chunk last I looked. It's now 53-51. Clippers with the lead. They're laying 1.5. Total in that game is 223.5. We closed with Golden State as a 2.5-point favorite. Now they're catching 1.5. That's in that game. We're sweating out a bet, John Collins, over 12.5 points. Let's check in and see how we're doing there, because John Collins stepping in here against this Golden State front court. He's got 8 points in the first half. That's what we're looking for. We're on pace to go over 12.5 points. That's really all I do is root for my bets. I mean, that's how I pay attention to all these sports, is just who would I bet on today? And that's why I care about who wins or who succeeds in each of these matchups. All right, next one up on the board, Jazz and the Trailblazers. How about Portland at home? And by the way, Utah's playing a lot of guys today. Utah's a weird team that you'll just see them rest a few pieces here and there. But Nurkic, who tends to miss time, he is playing in this game. Markkanen's playing in this game. Keontae George, who was dealing with, I think, an illness the other day, he is playing in this game. And it's 78-57. Portland with the lead. They're laying 18.5. 260.5 is the total in that matchup right now in Rip City. We are on Shaedon Sharpe over 31.5 points, rebounds, and assists combined. He has 17-5-2. So let's see, that's 22-24 at the break, or with 4.7 seconds to go before halftime. We're also on Klingon over 26.5 points, rebounds, and assists. He has 10-10-1. Okay, we're looking pretty good with both of those. And coming into this, we are 2-2 on the night. So two hits, two misses. It would help us a lot if we could finish 3-0 with the games that we're sweating out together live here on the air. All my picks, by the way, I throw them up at VSiN.com/picks earlier in the day. So the NBA props, they've been pretty good lately. I'm on a good run. You kind of have to just manage these runs at times where things are going well, you're seeing the board well, but there's always going to be a time where the adjustments happen and it's going to get rough. But NBA props doing pretty well. And in fact, later on today, I'm going to try something out because, you know, player props for a lot of games I want to bet on tomorrow are not available. We don't know injury status. We don't know if teams are on a back-to-back, how they're going to look coming into that with minutes played, injuries, and those matchups as well. So as these populate, later on tonight, we're going to kind of go through my process. I'm going to look at the board. I'm going to look at the news that I use, and we're going to, on the air, figure out who the best options are to back from a player prop perspective. Now, there is a chance this segment is a train wreck. But that might be the best reason to tune in for it, because it's on the fly. I can't script it. I don't know what the numbers are going to be. So I can't pull anything up ahead of time other than react to, I know this player is questionable, this player is out, and then we look at who to benefit from those matchups. So we'll do that a little bit later on in the program. You know, with the NFL playoff field being set today, there were numbers that jumped out to me. And then there were numbers where I was like, I feel like I'm being tricked. And I might have fallen for the candy as well, taking one of these dogs, catching more than a field goal coming up this weekend. I want to break that down a little bit later on in the show. But some updates in college basketball, in case you missed it. Decent card for a Monday today. Tomorrow is loaded. I mean, tomorrow is jam-packed with great matchups. Earlier today, Nebraska took care of Ohio State 72-69. Ohio State was a 2.5-point favorite there. Total was 154.5 in that matchup. So we end up going, let's see, 130, 141. We go under the total there. But Nebraska with another win, man. This time on the road in Big Ten play. Hoiberg's bunch, pretty legit, man. Ranked 10th in the country, undefeated on the season, and just went to Columbus and picked up a dub. The only college play that we did have earlier today, Michigan State, 80-51 over USC. I just, you know, Michigan State's involved in the game. I'm thinking about the under. When I saw the under was as high as it was, what did we close at? 151.5. So I think I bet 150.5. I went under on that. I didn't understand this line movement going up. Michigan State at home in East Lansing, they're going to dictate the entire style of the fight. They don't want to get up and run. They don't want to go trade shots with anyone. So, and they're also a physical team. I don't know if USC is right. USC is good, by the way. USC just unfortunately played Michigan and Michigan State the last couple of games. But USC is a solid team. Michigan State just plays a different style. And especially at home, I'm always leaning towards the under at 150-something. That was a crazy number to me. I immediately went under as soon as I saw it. There's a few teams out there that I'm just like, okay, under. I don't even care what the total is. I know that the people behind the counter know that these teams are more under teams. It doesn't matter. If it's Michigan State, here's my trio right now. Michigan State, Houston, and then Marist. That is my trio that I look for unders. I'm telling you right now, if the Marist Red Foxes are playing in a game and that total is like 129.5 or higher, I'm going under. On principle, I'm going under. I haven't watched them play in 20-something years. I just know that they play great defense this year, and they don't score the basketball. I am like 3-1 betting on unders in Marist games this season. So that's my trio of unders I'm looking for when it comes to the association. But right now, we're sweating out some NBA. I think the NBA needs a bigger spotlight because I'm looking at the MVP market. And by the way, I benefit from this. I have SGA to win MVP at plus 115. And Cade Cunningham's currently listed at 40-1. Did y'all see what the Detroit Pistons did to the Knicks today? They beat them 120-90. Okay. 121-90. I misspoke. And Cade Cunningham had 29-13-3. 29 points, 13 rebounds, or 13 assists, 3 rebounds for Cade Cunningham. And I understand SGA, the numbers are insane, But, like, let's be fair. Cade Cunningham is carrying that team right now. He's carrying Detroit. He's not going to win it. I know, like, this is going to fall on deaf ears. It's not going to change anything. Although we did see this MVP market when Joel Embiid took it from Nikola Jokic, thanks to a campaign led by Kendrick Perkins. You can manipulate this market. I am just not Kendrick Perkins. I don't have that cachet, and I think I'm okay with not having that cachet, if I'm being fair. But if we're going to talk most valuable player, and this is an argument that I get caught up in a lot, and it's one argument that I'm against in the Drake May, Matthew Stafford thing. If we're going to talk most valuable, and we're going to use the word valuable in the conversation, if that truly does matter, Cade Cunningham doesn't even have a competitor in this market. He is the most valuable player in the league. He is carrying a very okay, solid Detroit Pistons team to potentially being the one seed in the East this year. He's down to 30-1. He was 50-1 about 10 days ago when I looked. He was 40-1 about an hour ago. He's now 30-1. Should we just jump on this for funsies and see if it shortens up? You have to ask yourself if you'll have FOMO when it comes to these long shot futures. Will you have FOMO if he gets down to 5-1 and you don't have a piece of it? I think I would. So I'm going to look at my sports book in the break, and I think I'm going to bet a little bit on Cade Cunningham, and hopefully that shortens up in the next couple weeks here. But with Detroit playing the way they are, with him putting up crazy numbers, I just don't think he's getting enough respect. They are the one seed in the East. They are 27-9. They have a 3.5 game lead on the Celtics. They're up 4 on the Knicks. They're going to be the one seed. They're very similar to the Cavs a year ago. I think Cade Cunningham deserves a lot more respect on his name. All right, well, that's how we're getting started today. We'll keep you updated on all the action across the NBA, college basketball throughout the show. But when we return, the top stories in the National Football League. Plus, this team just made it 3 straight 10-win seasons. You'll hear from their head coach on the other side of Cashing Out.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Dustin Sweetelson with you all night long from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. I'm looking now. I'm seeing 30-1, best number for Cade Cunningham. Why don't we mess around and have a little fun and bet on a guy who's potentially going to be on the one seed in the East? See, it's funny. I'm using like all these talking points that I argued against in the Matthew Stafford, Drake May situation. Now I'm using them for my argument for Cade Cunningham, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But Cade Cunningham, 30-1. I'm going to have FOMO if I miss out. I'm just going to put a little bit on it, see what happens when we wake up tomorrow. And there we are, 30-1. We're in Cade Cunningham MVP. I don't think he wins, but maybe it messes with the market. I've got SGA at plus 115, like 30 seconds after Jokic got hurt a couple weeks ago. So I'm doing okay there. Put a little bit on Cunningham. Now I want Cunningham to win. I'd prefer Cunningham to hit at 30-1. So that's where we stand with that. I'm just going to say what we're all thinking. If you're watching us, by the way, you can listen SiriusXM channel 158. You can watch us on the VSiN Watch app and also on YouTube TV. That's how I watch all of VSiN programming. But I'm going to say what everyone's thinking. Yeah, I went a little hard on the holidays. This jacket's a little tighter than I'm used to right now. It's I got to get on that Kelly Bidlin plan. I got to lose the LBs. I'm not a big New Year's resolution person. I don't think any day is different from the next day. I think it's stupid when you act that way. I mean, I do the Monday diet, where every single week I tell myself I'm going to start a diet on Monday. And my whole thing is that the diet also ends on Monday. So there, at least one out of the 7 days a week, I was dieting, but apparently that was not working during the holiday season based on what you see on your screen. So we're going to say it, put it out into the universe. Let's get it together, Dustin. Let's mix in a few salads here and there, and let's make this jacket bigger, buddy. But maybe 3 months from now, okay? Let's lose about 20, 30 pounds quickly. We got a long way to go, but we got to start somewhere. Anyway, that went on way longer than I needed it to. Let's now tackle the top stories in the National Football League. And we do it every single night on the show with the three-point stance.
The top stories in football.
We want some more! We want some more! We want some more!
every single day.
Ice up, son. Ice up.
This is 3-Point Stance.
Hey, I'm just here so I don't get fined.
We'll play intramurals, brother.
Oh, yeah. Tough day, man. Tough day in NFL circles as coach firings across the NFL go down. Arizona moves on from Jonathan Gannon. The Falcons let go of Raheem Morris. The Browns, they move on from Kevin Stefanski. Pete Carroll fired in Las Vegas, as that adds to the additional firings we had midseason with the Giants and the Titans. And now we have openings all across the National Football League. We'll start with Jonathan Gannon, as I was dead wrong about this guy. I made fun of him when he first got hired. I started to buy into him as a coach because watching his team play, they were competitive. They fought. They were just not very good. This year, there was a lot of injuries. But, you know, in the face of adversity, you can show yourself to be a leader in a locker room. And I just don't think Jonathan Gannon has the personality to deal with that adversity, at least as a leader. Maybe as a defensive coordinator, he had success with Philly, and he's going to get a job immediately. He's certainly not going to TV, I can tell you that much. He will not be a broadcaster anytime soon. But, you know, 15-36 in three seasons, ended on a 9-game losing streak. He had a 294 win percentage. That ranks 200th out of 207 coaches who've coached at least 50 games in the NFL. I think it's a little weird that Monty Ossenfort, the GM, is staying there, but I think Jonathan Gannon is a lesson for future head coaches. Don't go somewhere that doesn't let you choose the quarterback. He will never be a head coach again in the NFL, and his one chance to do so, he did it with Kyler Murray, someone who legitimately can't see his receivers 20 yards down the field. So it's like playing, if you're going to go to a situation where you're going to let them choose your quarterback, that's like playing GoldenEye back in the day on N64, and being told that the weapon you have to use in your fight is the knife. Like, you can only go so far with that. You may like take one or two people down in GoldenEye, but the reality is you're never going to win the game. And if you're Kyler Murray's your quarterback, you're never going to win the Super Bowl. And that's the situation that Jonathan Gannon found himself in. Raheem Morris in Atlanta, it had to be done. He seems like a nice guy. Seems like a weird guy. Seems like a nice guy. But it also is a little weird to get fired when you're on a 4-game win streak. But I actually think the 4-game win streak proves why the Falcons needed to fire him, because they were always capable of this. Why did you perform so much better when the pressure was off, but when the pressure was on, you didn't show up? And more importantly, if you go back and watch these games in the fourth quarter, especially close ones, why was your best player, Bijan Robinson, not on the field on selective drives here and there? He should be involved almost in every play if I'm Raheem Morris and I'm coaching for my job. Questionable decisions were made. He went 4-7, 8-9, 8-9. But you're playing in the NFC South. Anyone could have won that division this year, and you didn't because you failed as a head coach this season. The Browns letting go of Kevin Stefanski. We'll have more on this a little bit later, but they did him a favor. This was a nice thing to do for Kevin Stefanski, no matter how they want to word it and act like he let them down. No. He could do better, and he's going to do better in this coaching cycle. With the Raiders, Pete Carroll was always a weird hire. They were the team so far away from winning, and also made the Ashton Jeanty pick even more questionable. But you need so much infrastructure if you're the Raiders. You need offensive line. You need defensive line. You need linebackers. You haven't had a good secondary in like 15 years. You have no weapons outside of Bowers and Jeanty, no receivers to throw to, and you don't have a quarterback. And I think in the end, Las Vegas should have been asking themselves a question. Why was Seattle so quick to move on at the end? Well, they weren't going to give him another year or two to figure things out. A guy who brought them a Super Bowl. It's because people lose their fastball, and you want to be on the right side of that. You want to move on before they lose it completely, and you don't want to buy in on them when it's completely gone. And unfortunately, that's what the Raiders did here with Pete Carroll. So that's where we stand with all the coaching news. And in case you missed it yesterday, and if you're listening to me, you probably didn't miss it, but the Pittsburgh Steelers won the North. Can you imagine that? This network spent a lot of time the last 2 years just annihilating Mike Tomlin, questioning whether he can still do it, wondering, is it time for Pittsburgh to move on? I mean, the idiot you're listening to right now has been making a case for someone to trade for Mike Tomlin the last few years. There's no reason for Mike Tomlin to not be the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers until Mike Tomlin chooses to not be. That is the cachet he has. He just won 10 games with no secondary, with his best weapon, DK Metcalf, suspended down the stretch the final two games of the year. Aaron Rodgers, who, I mean, if we're lucky, we're considering what, quarterback 21 in the league this year? I haven't really looked at it, but he doesn't have his full capacity that we're used to seeing from Aaron Rodgers. And he just won the North, man. He won the division. He won 10 games. Mike Tomlin won 10 games. Back to back. It's absurd. It doesn't make sense. Here is Mike Tomlin discussing winning 10 games with Aaron Rodgers after last night's win over the Ravens.
I've admired him from afar for a long time. It's good to do it with him. But again, as I've said multiple times here in recent weeks, this was the vision in the spring when we pursued him. That's why you do business with a 41, 42-year-old guy. Been there, done that guy with a resume like his. He's not only capable, man, he thrives in it. And I think he put that on display tonight.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers in critical moments last night was impressive. I mean, it's the only way to talk about it. And he proved last night he still has enough, right? He still has enough in the tank when he needs to reach back and make a big play, he did. And more importantly, he can still diagnose and process with the best of them. It's just a matter is if he has enough time to throw the ball where he wants to throw it. That's it. If you can protect him in a pocket right now, he can make enough throws to keep you in the game and win you games like he did last night against Baltimore on Sunday Night Football. Pittsburgh opens as part of our third story here on the three-point stance with the playoff field being set. They open as three-point dogs at home to Houston on Monday night. Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers, I guess Tomlin wasn't the head coach, but the Pittsburgh Steelers have not lost a Monday Night Football game going back like three or four presidents, okay? Legitimately, three or four. I know we had a couple repeats in there that kind of speaks volumes even more, but like four presidents they haven't won a touchdown in. Pittsburgh catching the three, totals 39.5. This does feel like where the rubber meets the road, though, right? This feels like the end of the road. Shout out to Boys to Men. By the way, I just finished the Diddy documentary. I know it has nothing to do with Boys to Men, but the Diddy documentary, that is a mind. I don't even know how to explain what I just watched. But back to this game, where I think this is where it ends for Pittsburgh. I think the under is the play. I'll talk about that a little bit later. But if I was betting this one, I'd lay that three with Houston because I need you to make the case to me. You tell me, at Dustin Sweetelson, at VSiN Live, how does Pittsburgh score multiple touchdowns? They can score one. How do they score two? Give me the recipe. Show me the formula. What's your algorithm say, you EPA nerds in my mentions? What does the algorithm tell you about Pittsburgh scoring multiple touchdowns here? I'm envisioning a touchdown and like three field goals. So what's that? 9-7. We're looking at 16 points for Pittsburgh in this game. That is like the absolute max out when it comes to the Pittsburgh Steelers going up against the Texans in the wild card round. And it wouldn't be the wild card round without the Houston Texans. Let's be very fair. The Houston Texans have become a staple of watching wild card football. And I look forward to them and our 13-1 ticket to win the AFC, making a run beginning on the road at the Steelers. ProfitX, the number one sports prediction market, has some of the best future pricing you'll find on the Super Bowl. Can Houston do it? Plus, they've also got the College Football National Championship odds up as well. With a huge slate coming up this week, it's the perfect time to get in and take advantage of ProfitX's 20% purchase match. All you have to do is download ProfitX today and experience the future of winning. Use promo code VSiN to get started over at ProfitX. It's Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. A lot to get to over the course of the show, including I'm going to rank the NFL head coach openings throughout the league. My number one, I think, will surprise you. But when we return, like, love, and loathe from the weekend, and my last piece on the MVP race.
Here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing Out rolls on from the Circa Sportsbook. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. Thanks for making us a part of your night. However you may be tuning in, SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. NBA action still going on deep into the night. Right now, Clippers up 4. 61-57 on Golden State. They're laying 1.5. Are the Clippers? Ooh, it just flipped. Flip now to Golden State minus 1.5 as they just got a bucket. It's 61-57. Clippers with the lead. Total right now, 211.5 in that contest. Just checking in on our bet. That's all I care about is my bet. I mean, I care about your bets too. As long as your bets aren't against my bets, I want your bets to win as well. We did bet on John Collins over 12.5 points. He's still sitting on eight. Oh, we need more. Come on. We need more. A little more. He's playing 24 minutes. You got to get the ball to John Collins. It's a good matchup against that Warriors front court for him. Let's get a few more buckets there, JC. Ooh. not great calling people JC. Other game going on right now, Jazz and Trailblazers. It's a 30-point lead for Portland. Before I even look at the player props we bet, I'm terrified we're going to lose because they're blowing out the Jazz at home. Kind of a surpriser. What was this number? Where did it close at? You know what? Portland closed -5.5. There was money coming in on Utah because we opened at 7, went to 5.5. Total big drop, 246 down to 241.5. In-game total, 258.5. Ooh, I'm not watching that game right now. They're 538 to go in the third quarter. I think under 258.5, you'd have to think about, but I'm not watching the game to really know how the pace is. But such a big jump on a game that was steamed the other way, I would think about under 258.5 with that being so far off where we closed. Checking in on our bets because, again, I care about that. Oh, Donovan Klingon got home already. He has 12 points, 16 rebounds, 2 assists. We went over on him at 26.5 PRA, so that is a win. Shade on Sharp, we went over 31.5 PRA. That's points, rebounds, and assists combined. He has 23, 26, 32. We just got home, so that is that. Right now, 1, 2, 3, we're 4-2 on the night. John Collins, if he cashes, would make us 5-2 or make us 4-3. See, I can do math. I was in the special math class in high school, so I want everyone to go find my high school math teacher. I got to remember her name. She was kind of hot. We were all kind of into her. We flirted with her. I mean, at least I tried to. I didn't really know how to flirt back then, but we were all into her, and we were in special math because we were not the smartest kids in the world. I think if you listen to my voice, you kind of know I'm not that smart to begin with. So right now on the night, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, plus you factor in we won our one college basketball bet, 1, 2, 3, 5, 5-2 so far. 5-2, that's a pretty good Monday. Yesterday was ugly. I'll be transparent about that. Every time it goes wrong, look, it was week 18. I took some shots and some anytime touchdown bets, some guys on the bench that I thought would show up and show out, and they did not. I had a good time with my boy JVT, though, doing Live Bet Sunday with him, reacting to the games as they unfolded. We were watching that absolute calamity of a mess when it came to Green Bay and Minnesota. It was so ugly, I enjoyed it. It really was, but speaking of that, let's look back on what went down on the weekend. And we do it every single Monday on the show with Like, Love, and Loathe. Here is what I liked from the weekend, and that is Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons. Look, Arthur Blank is a guy I love. I am a huge fan of Arthur Blank. I moved to Atlanta in 2003, and I realized that guy's fingerprints are all over the city. I mean, he is so important to the city of Atlanta, and he's a good guy. Really good guy, cares about people, a loyal person. And I was really concerned that loyalty was going to get taken advantage of, and he was going to give Raheem Morris another year. We've seen enough. Raheem Morris is not a head coach in the NFL. Like, that's all I can tell you. Raheem Morris has no business being the leader of a locker room. He can be your coordinator. I think he's fine in that role. He's a very good coordinator. I wouldn't call him a great. He's a good coordinator, but he is not fit to be the head coach of an NFL franchise. Last 2 years, 8-9, both seasons. And the big problem I see here for him is winning the games down the stretch, finishing on a 4-game winning streak. You proved why you're not the correct man for the job. You showed what you were capable of being and doing. You just did it at the wrong time. You did it when there was no stakes in the game anymore, when there was no pressure. When you look at the NFC South, you could have won it this year. Tampa Bay tried to give it away. Carolina ends up winning it. How does that happen? When you look at the disparity in talent on the rosters, there isn't a world where Atlanta should be finishing behind Carolina. All the weapons that the Falcons have, yet they sit there at 8-9. Division could have been yours. The defense made some improvements, but let's be clear. They were just elite at sacking the quarterback. They weren't great at anything else. But that was an issue for Atlanta. I give them credit for addressing that, but I got to give Arthur Blank a lot of credit. He moved on. The guy was not the right person to lead you to the promised land. You got rid of the GM, Terry Fontenot, who was like the biggest donk in the game right now. And now you're going to get two new people in, a fresh set of eyeballs with new ideas. Rich McKay has stepped down as CEO. They're starting from scratch, and I couldn't be happier for the Atlanta Falcons. I think they have a great opportunity with the way the roster is right now to set themselves up to win the division right away next year. So credit to Arthur Blank. That is my like from the weekend in the NFL. What I loved from the weekend in the NFL was Matthew Stafford and him becoming and closing as your favorite in the MVP race in the NFL. And he went out against Arizona, and there's a lot of New England fans in my mentions talking about, well, Arizona just did against Arizona what you're criticizing Drake May for doing against the Jets. It was totally different. Arizona actually was moving the ball and scoring early, and Stafford had to put them away. Did they maybe add on a touchdown at the end that was unnecessary? Hey, don't take your foot off the gas. And at the end of the year, Matthew Stafford finishes the season 46 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. He had more yards than Drake May. He had more touchdowns than Drake May, and he did it against better teams. And that's ultimately what matters the most to me. Don't move the goalpost. How did they perform against common opponents? Matthew Stafford faced so many better opponents throughout the season than Drake May faced. It's not even a conversation. He beat Indy at their peak, which won't even be factored into playing good teams this year. If his kicker was worth anything, he wins at Philly on the road early in the season. But his kicker lets him down. You want to hold it against Matthew Stafford as if this is a team achievement award? It's an individual. And my eyeballs tell me Matthew Stafford was the best player in the NFL this year. In fact, his head coach agrees. Let's hear from Sean McVay, who said this about Matthew Stafford after yesterday's win.
And to answer your question, Sarah, yes, I think Matthew's the MVP of the league. He played that way. Wouldn't want anybody else leading the way. Got a lot of respect for a bunch of people in this league, but there's nobody I'd rather have being the quarterback of the LA Rams than Matthew Stafford. His play speaks for itself.
Yeah, I mean, it does, but I'm going to speak for it here. And I promise last time, I'm not going to do it again unless someone baits me into it, and then I'm going to have to put them away. But the eye test also matters here. We'll get to that in a moment. Quarterbacks who led the league with 46-plus passing touchdowns since 2000. Peyton Manning in 04, Brady in 07, Breeze in 11, Peyton in 2013 again, Mahomes in 18, Rodgers in 20, Stafford in 2025. Okay, history's in his favor. Eye test. Let's talk about the eye test. Drake May's been awesome. I'm not knocking. I'm not taking anything away from Drake May, but you want to compare them, and I have to use things that have to put context on the conversation, and the schedule does matter. The defenses matter. The matchups matter. Don't give me your EPA per play BS. I'm so sick of hearing all you nerds quote stuff you don't even understand anymore. Stafford, if you watch him play the position, in command on a different level than anyone in the game right now, not named Dak Prescott. May was tremendous. He was awesome. He was amazing. Let's see him do it with the schedule that Matthew Stafford had. Unfortunately, he didn't have it. So it is going to get held against him. It's not his fault, but it's a reality of the situation. Three, people mention that Matthew Stafford's weapons, Puka Nacua, Devontae Adams, as if like that's the tiebreaker between Stafford and May. I need you to get this clear. This award is about the best season, not who did more with less. There's nothing about this award that said who did more with less. It's strictly results. Stafford's results are better. I don't even know how this is a thing. And Patriots fans, if this is a thing that weapons matter, let's go give back Tom Brady's MVP award from 2007 when he was throwing to Randy Moss and Wes Welker. Then I see a lot of conversation about Matthew Stafford and the one-yard touchdowns. We crush teams and quarterbacks who can't punch it into the goal line. Now this is a knock. Go watch the throws he's making, the touch, the timing, the way he puts it where only his guy can get it. It's a beautiful thing to watch Matthew Stafford throwing these touchdowns at the one-yard line. And by the way, you take away all of his one-yard touchdown passes, Matthew Stafford would still lead the NFL in passing touchdowns this year. They're the 5 seed. I hear that as a knock against Stafford as well. Why do people decide this has to be a certain seed to decide who's the individual best player in the league? Matthew Stafford, if he had the easiest schedule in the last 30 years, he would have won 14, 15, 16 games as a quarterback going up against the schedule Drake May had. And then finally, you can reference all your advanced stats you want to build the case for May. I would tell you, I don't respect the stats you're referencing because of who they were against, okay? Stop telling me certain situations May was better. I don't respect the numbers he put up this year. It is not equal to what Matthew Stafford did. And then finally, my last story in Like, Love, and Loathe, what I loathe from the weekend. Can you tell? I'm passionate about Matthew Stafford. The Cincinnati Bengals are bringing back Zach Taylor. NFL's got to step in at some point. He's 52-63-1 in 7 seasons, 2 playoff appearances, 16-26 in division, 28-30 at home. Since making the Super Bowl, Zach Taylor is 24-27. Everyone wants to reference Joe Burrow's health being the issue. Here's the reality. He's gone 17-16 over the last 3 seasons. When Burrow starts, you need a coach who can scheme around the deficiencies in this team that is unwilling to put a proper offensive line and defense on the field that can win on the margins. Zach Taylor's proven he is not that guy. And if he can't protect his greatest resource in Joe Burrow, I mean, you got to find someone who can. Because if not, Joe Burrow is going to find his way leaving this organization. So that is Like, Love, and Loathe. When we return, I really thought about this underdog in the playoffs this week in the NFL. Instead, I'm going to go team total. I'll tell you who it is next.
Yeah.
to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back at it. It is Cashing Out VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Dustin Sweetelson with you. Hope you had a great weekend. A happy new year for a lot of you. Back to reality today. I know it was tough. I know it was the first day of the week. You knew what day of the week it was in a very long time. It was indeed Monday. It definitely felt like a Monday. Congratulations. You made it through it. We're almost there in the home stretch. Tuesday, just around the corner. We have more coming up in the show, including a conversation in 15 minutes. Zachary Cohen, VSiN.com. Have to get his thoughts on not just the NFL playoff field and the NBA, but the college football playoff. Two games this week, Thursday, Friday, we get the action, which will set up for a national title that I'm already excited to be on the air for. When you think about it in a couple weeks, it's either going to be an Ole Miss team that's galvanized behind Pete Golding and making Lane Kiffin look worse and worse every step of the way, or the Miami Hurricanes and Mario Cristobal, a coach, if I'm going to be fair about, who I was excited to take over the program that I root for. I never really believed it would get here. He kept getting in the way every time there was opportunities. And then in the other matchup, Oregon and Indiana, it's either Kurt Cignetti putting the bow on the greatest run in the history of coaching for 2 years, or Oregon finally getting over the hump and winning a national championship after being so close so many times. So we'll have more on the college football playoff. We'll have more on that coming up with Zach Cohen in 15 minutes. Then in about 30 minutes, or I guess 45 minutes, we're going to chat with Jeff Erickson, RotoWire.com. What are the best matchups in the postseason in the NFL? What does he make of San Francisco and Philly? Because that's strength on strength. And speaking of Philly, in our final hour, we're kicking off Sean Green Sports Gambling Podcast. He is an Eagles fan. And I have to ask him, you know, not a lot of talk out there about the Philadelphia Eagles, the defending Super Bowl champions, by the way. Can they go back to back in what is an absolutely watered down playoff field? Is there a world where that team can do just enough on offense where they could be back in the Super Bowl? They have to get through San Francisco first. That game's going to be at home, but it's Vic Fangio taking on Kyle Shanahan's offense. That's the best chess match of the weekend, if you ask me. So we'll talk to Sean about that coming up in an hour and 13 minutes here on the show. But with the playoff field being set, I did immediately fire on a few bets here. Let's begin with the Rams and the Panthers. LA laying 10, a total of 46.5. And, you know, I initially, first glance, was like, let's take the Panthers in the 10. I didn't do that. I saw it was up to 10.5 at one shop earlier today. Maybe I'll end up getting there by the end of the week. You know, this is the spot where you look to take Carolina. I don't trust them on the road. I don't trust them as a favorite. But if they're at home and they're a dog, they're good. 9-5 against the spread at home this year. 5-2 covering the number as a home dog. They average 20.9 points per game at home versus 16 points per game on the road. I just think the situation is bad to look at Carolina as of right now. I just, they're not catching the Rams by surprise. They got them already once. We saw this game play out a few weeks ago, and they gave the Rams their best shot, which may actually in turn hurt them in the end because the Rams know exactly what they want to do to take advantage of some of the issues that Los Angeles has here. And instead, I'm going to go team total on the Rams. We're going to go over 28.5 because I'm concerned about the Rams' defense. I think the Rams' defense might allow a few scores here to Carolina, and the Rams are going to have their best punch offensively to take care of business. The Rams defense the last 4 weeks is allowing 29.75 points per game. Over the last three, they're the sixth worst scoring defense. And that's behind only Dallas, Arizona, Miami, the Jets, and Indy. So Dallas, Arizona, Miami, and the Jets, the four worst defenses in football, plus the Colts. I think because the Rams defense is struggling right now, Carolina could score, but more importantly, it could create just more possessions for the offense to have to get up and down the field. And I think for the Rams offensively, we saw them look out of sync for a couple weeks there. And I think McVay wants to keep that rhythm going. And because of that, they're just going to keep running their offense, putting up points and go over that number of 28.5 for whatever it's worth. We've got McVay 4-2 to the over on Saturdays this season in his career. Now let's go to the Packers and the Bears. Chicago's laying 1.5. Total is 45.5 right now. This is the toughest one to figure out here, but I like the over. And it takes a lot for me to like an over in the NFL, let alone an over in a playoff game. But I think because this game's being played at Soldier Field, it's going to be played on the Bears' terms. And the Bears' terms is let's spread it out. Let's get wide open. Let's go up and down. And Ben Johnson is going to be in his freaking bag. This guy has been waiting for this opportunity to lead a team in the playoffs. You're going to see every trick in the book. He wants to knock off the Packers, a team that he played twice earlier this year. And I think for Green Bay, there are some issues defensively. No Devontae Wyatt on the D-line. Micah Parsons out as well for the year. And the last 4 weeks, that defense has allowed 26.25 points per game, including week 18 against Minnesota, where they only allowed 16. Still averaging 26.25 allowed with a good showing against that offense for Minnesota at the end of the season. Chicago defense not good either, allowing 25.7 points per game over their last three. They're letting everyone run up and down the field on them. If Green Bay can be dominant with the run game and establish off of that their throwing game, I do believe they're going to score against Chicago. And I think the way the Packers defense is playing of late, Chicago's going to get theirs as well. I like over 46. I think we're playing into the low mid-50s potentially in this game. Ben Johnson, head coach of the Bears, what does he make of the matchup with the Packers?
And good opponent, and you know, I think we're fairly evenly matched. Got a lot of respect for how well they're coached. I have a lot of respect for the talent level that they have in that building, and you know, I'd expect it to be another exciting game. We're quickly transitioning. We're locked in. The stakes are a lot higher here going forward. We can't afford to have a phase, one of our three phases, play like we did today. And so we're going to have to pick it up. And like I said, I get fired up just thinking about it right now. And I know our guys are too.
Man, remember when everyone was talking about him, like he had no social skills, he had no ability to communicate. Like people were treating him like he was a nonverbal adult. Like, I don't understand. We got to go back. Receipts on those reports talking about Ben Johnson not being a good communicator, not being a leader of men, being a shy introvert. Every time he speaks, he feels pretty real to me. Like he feels like a pretty transparent dude that's not giving you BS, not giving you fluff. Maybe at times like acts a little bit like a hardo, but I don't mind that from the motivational aspect that you need to be as a head coach in the NFL. But Ben Johnson has passed every single test every step of the way. I actually like Chicago to win this game. I know a lot of people don't want to buy into the Bears. I think they win this game, and I think it's played on their terms. I prefer the over, though. And Matt LaFleur is part of the reason why I like the over. He's 34-26 to the over on the road. He's 21-13 to the over when the total's between 42.5 and 49. He is 10-6 to the over in the month of January. Give me the over all day long. The next bet that I placed, I will acknowledge, I took the candy. I think I might be taking the bait from the sports book. There were two lines when they came out. I was like, yeah, the sports book wants you to do that. It was the Niners catching 3.5, which is up to 4.5 against the Eagles. And then this one that I bet, the Chargers plus 3.5 at New England. I just said before the playoffs started, if it's Chargers in New England, give me the Chargers, give me the points. I think they can win that game outright. I don't want to sound like I'm a Drake May and Patriot hater. I promise you I'm not. Like, I love the Vrabel hiring. I actually like Drake May, the player. I just think the Chargers defense is going to travel. I think it's going to show up. They're ninth in scoring, 20 points per game allowed, fifth versus the pass, eighth versus the run, and defense travels. I know a lot of people are like, hey, it's a warm weather team going to a cold weather. Do you think everyone who plays for the Chargers is from Los Angeles? Do you think they didn't live somewhere else, grow up somewhere else, play college somewhere else, play in the NFL and other stops as well? You think they've never played in cold before? It's my least favorite argument ever. But with this matchup, if you look at how the Chargers have been successful the last 2 years under Jim Harbaugh, they condense the game. They play for limited possessions. They put Justin Herbert in a spot in the fourth quarter where he just has to make a few plays and his team can get the win. And I think because they're going to make it lower possession, it's going to be low scoring, which means I have to side with the dog because there will be potential for just a play or two to change the entire outcome of the game in the fourth quarter. Jim Harbaugh, 6-3 against the spread as a dog with the Chargers, 15-9 in his career. He's 4-2 against the spread as a road dog with the Chargers. Mike Vrabel, 2-3 covering the number in playoff games. Give me the Chargers. Chargers catching the 3.5 all freaking day long. And then finally, Texans and Steelers under 39.5. Texans defense, I can make the case it's the best in football. If it's not, it's at worst the second or third best defense in football. Number one in EPA per play. I don't totally understand what it means, but people tell me if you quote it, you sound smart. Second in scoring, fourth versus the run, third in opponent completion percentage, sixth in passing yards allowed. I don't see Pittsburgh scoring touchdowns, plural, against this team. DeMeco Ryans is 17-6 to the under in his career. He's 16-10 to the under on the road, 8-5 to the under when a favorite of 3.5 to 9.5, 22-13 to the under on grass. He is 2-0 to the over in wildcard games, though. I will point that out. But more under trends in our favor. And Tomlin, 65-50 to the under as a dog, 22-13 to the under as a home dog. Give me the under all day long. It feels like a 14-10 game. I mean, something crazy like that. That is how I view that game going between the Texans and the Steelers. Hey, you can head into the new year by becoming a smarter better. Get the strategy powered by VSiN Pro. Join VSiN Pro, get instant access to everything we do. To make more informed bets, sign up, get the daily best bets from all the shows, real-time DraftKings and Circa betting splits, AI-powered prop tools, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Get started today for just $9.99 or save 50% with an annual plan. Start betting smarter at VSiN.com/subscribe.